You're listening to the Geekly Chronicles, Series 4,
Episode 5.
Thanks for listening back to the Geekly Chronicles.
This show was recorded on the 3rd of June, 2016.
This version of the show isn't quite the same as the one that went out live, as we've had to edit out all of the songs.
It's nothing personal. We're just big fans of making sure artists get paid for the great things they create.
If you want to listen back to the show in its full musical glory,
wow,
head over to our Mixcloud channel, where you'll find every episode of the Geekly Chronicles as it was meant to be heard.
Ooh.
That's mixcloud.com/GKLYCO.
Thanks again for listening.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Gather round your wirelesses and join us in the week that someone finally tracked down the identity of ugly naked guy from Friends.
Wow. A child in Northern Ireland found methamphetamine inside their Kinder egg.
That really is a Kinder surprise.
It really is.
A vegan restaurant in Texas was protested on its first opening day by meat eaters who waved sausages and steaks at its patrons.
Wow. And a man has said he was completely horrified to find his new passport made him look a bit like Adolf Hitler.
Who does he think he's kidding? After inventing it 42 years ago, Dr. Heimlich has used the Heimlich manoeuvre this week for the first time.
Wow.
First time for everything. And a man has said that Margaret Thatcher's face appeared to him in a cloud as a sign of which way to vote in the EU referendum.
Of course it did.
And in all of those weeks, it's the Geekly Chronicles.
Hello!
Hello!
Hello, welcome. So, we've got a great show lined up for you this week. Loads of really exciting stuff coming. A lot of our usual features. I mean, after the song, we'll have Would You Fund It?, which is our weekly feature where we ask you, the listeners, to vote for whether or not you would fund some crazy ideas that we've had, whether that's a TV show or an event or something like that. We pitch it to you. You tell us whether you think it's any good or not. And we'll see how that goes.
We will.
Did you know also that today, how exciting, is National Fish and Chip Day?
Ooh. I mean, it's Fish and Chip Friday.
No, but this is a special one.
Ah.
It is National Fish and Chip
Fantastic.
Day.
Fantastic.
Well, it's National Fish and Chip Day here in the UK, and it's National Donut Day in the US. So we are going to be internationalizing these holidays.
Fantastic.
And celebrating them with all of you, our listeners from around the world.
I'm in support of this plan.
What else have we got going on tonight?
Well, we have got a super exciting guest later in the show. We're going to be talking to Dr. Sue Black, OBE. Oh, yeah. About the amazing stuff that she does and how she saved Bletchley Park.
Very cool.
And we've got the usual forecast, Game of Geeks, and so on. And yeah, it's the Geekly Chronicles.
And the Tumble Fumble. Let's not
forget about that. Yeah.
You just kind of trailed off at the end of that sentence there.
And the Tumble Fumble.
Yes.
We'll fix it.
Are you going to say any words, Catherine?
No. I'm wordless.
Okay.
No,
excellent.
Okay. All right. Well, you can get your requests in as well, either on Twitter or via the chat room, or just do what you can to contact to scream into the wind or have wind. I don't really know. But don't look at me like that, Catherine. Honestly, this is a mature radio show. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
So if you're in the chat room, do request songs. If you're on Twitter, do request songs. We will play your requests throughout the evening. But first things first, we'll get the show started with something that I think quite accurately describes the state of our presenters.
You're listening to the Geekly Chronicles.
Ah, well, virtually insane. That's us.
Pretty much. Speaking of which,
yes,
in fact, that leads quite nicely on to the Would You Fund It?
Yeah, so as I mentioned at the start of the show, every week we give you listeners the opportunity to vote for an idea. And the idea is, would you put money towards this? We're not actually asking you for money. This is not actually Kickstarter, but it's us saying...
Other platforms
if
are
this,
available.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have to click a button one way or the other.
What would you do?
One way or the other. I'm going to click you.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've been pitching these different ideas. I've pitched a couple. Chris has pitched a couple. And now it's your turn, Catherine, to pitch us another idea. So
yeah. So... our ideas so far have been, you know, that we've had a lot of kind of TV series ideas, kind of reality TV, game shows, that kind of thing. So it kind of got me thinking about this trend for Great British stuff. You know, we've got Great British Bake Off, Great British Sewing Bee, you know, all these kind of shows which are...
A sewing bee?
A sewing bee, yeah.
As in, is that a bee that does sewing?
Yes.
Yeah. But aren't the bees shocking? Disappearing at an alarming rate?
Not alarming enough that they can't be on TV.
Wow. Okay. So is this raising awareness of the... Anyway, sorry, I'm digressing.
Anyway, yeah. So there seems to be this... I don't know. And there also seems to be this kind of interest in sort of Britishness as a thing.
Hmm. Really?
Well, I don't know. It seems that way to me. So some of the kind of... almost like, you know, sort of Anglophiles or whatever the British version of that is. You know, Britophiles, Water filters.
Brita water. Yes, we are all Brita water filters at heart.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
And to things like, I suppose, BBC programming is becoming more available sort of worldwide. You know, Sherlock is kind of huge in China.
Well, I've seen huge posters for Doctor Who in the US and things like that. So that seems
I think
popular.
Doctor Who is massive in kind of Brazil and sort of South America as well. Oh. I can't think. Where is it? Is it in... where is it? They call him Dr. Mysterio. I'm not sure. It's somewhere. Anyway, it's brilliant. So I was just sort of thinking, well, rather than a kind of show on TV, what if you could get people to go along and almost have like a 2-week class or boot camp in Britishness, a Great British boot camp, if you will.
A Great British boot camp.
Wow.
So you can sort of learn about, you know, all the... sort of things that British people apparently do and love and the way that they behave and how you can pick up Britishisms.
What a great idea.
I mean, I suppose it works as well, like, it not just if you want to learn more about being British, but if as a British person you have become un-British, you have
lost
gone
your
against
way.
The way.
Yeah, got an Asbo or something.
Yeah, something like that.
So it's not just for tourists, this is for everyone that has lost their way from the one true path of Britishness.
Yes, basically.
For the people that put the milk in first.
I'd send them to boot camp. I would send them straight to Great British
Boot
Camp.
We put together a little advertisement to show you what, you know, what this might be like. So, yeah, would you fund it?
Would you fund it?
Have you received an Asbo in the last 3 months? Do your neighbours think you're a lout? Have you been called a hoodie? Attend Great British Boot Camp and make it go away.
As if it's not been a rough enough couple of weeks, I definitely won't be bothering my neighbours again. Not without baking them a stupid cake first.
Do you find yourself watching more and more BBC programming? Do you fantasise about a life at Downton Abbey? Does David Tennant give you fuzzy feelings? Join us for an immersive British experience at Great British Boot Camp.
Oh my god, I didn't realise how many British words I just didn't know. Like brawly and pavement and nibbles. And I don't know what I thought smoking a fag was before today. But it sure wasn't anything to do with cigarettes.
Our staff will make sure you get an intensive introduction to British life.
You are waiting for a train. It is due in 2 minutes and you don't have a ticket. What do you do?
Get on the train without one, you silly old git.
Ooh, not without getting a stern telling off from the conductor.
Oh, I know. You get in the queue for a ticket and then you wait your turn.
That is right. And what if the train starts pulling up?
Oh, I look at my watch and make a tunning noise?
Correct.
That's right. At the end of this 2-week program, you'll be making brekkie, carrying eggs on spoons, and making double entendres like a true Brit. Sign up at our website now to receive a free tea set. It's the bee's knees.
Citizenship not included.
Wow, I'd vote for it.
Yeah.
But I want to fund that right now. Let's make it happen.
I can imagine. I mean, yeah, I'd go.
I can imagine that you know, you kind of have day trips and stuff as well. You know, you'd get to take rides on trains.
Oh, yeah.
You know, go to kind of King's Cross Station and check out Platform 9 and 3/4.
Head to Greg's the Baker's.
Yeah.
And Greg's
Yeah. Mm.
Brilliant.
You say head to... surely we can get Greg's the Baker's as the official caterers of Great British Boot Camp.
I love the idea. It's not a bad one.
I love it, yeah.
We have to think back to last week as well, where we were doing Goldilocks and the three Bants, or the three lads. That was it. You have to make sure that they have a Bant day where they get to go and
have
see
a cheeky
lads
Nando's.
In their natural habitat, have a cheeky
Nando's night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm loving this.
Gives you exposure to all sorts of British culture.
Let's do it.
British.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Even if nobody votes to fund this.
Yeah.
Although,
so if you do want to vote to fund it, you can find a poll on our Twitter account, which is at GKLYCO, or you can go to the website at gkly.co/fundit.
Yep. And do get your votes in. We'll be checking back in on that towards the end of the show.
Speaking of exciting, I'm going to have to leave.
Yes. Where are you going, Catherine?
Oh, I'm going to the fish and chip shop.
Oh, is this because it's Fish and Chip Friday?
Yeah, I'm going to get us fish and chips to eat live on air.
I like that idea. Okay. I like that idea.
With that in mind.
She's off.
To leave.
We will dial you in when you're in the fish and chip shop and get a live geekly exclusive from our local chippy.
She's literally
here at
off.
Tiny Kettle
she's
Studios.
I'm literally leaving.
Yes, taking the headphones
bye,
off.
Catherine.
She's got throwing the bag over the shoulder and heading off. So Catherine will dial you in once you're at the chip shop. Do let us know. But first we've got a request that we can play. This is from OB6160.
It's the Geekly Chronicles.
Now, the gritting forecast issued by the Geekly Chronicles on behalf of the Highways Agency at 1900. The general synopsis this evening. Your teeth, 2 on a good day, 12 during exams. Grinning bears possible. In an oyster, 5. Your world contained therein. Sandpaper, 320, very fine. Fish tanks, 5. Scuba diving around castle, not recommended. Motorways, M1 to M898, all cars the same shade of filthy winter brown. A roads, occasional, caution advised. B roads, rare, extreme slippage warning. Driveways, 9. Time you actually arrive at work, 11. Welsh quarries in the 1970s. Doctors and police boxes likely. In your trainers, 1. You've been gravelled. In your eye, 3. Chance of optometry later. And that ends the gritting forecast.
You're listening to the Geekly Chronicles.
There appear to be a lot of pictures of Krispy Kreme and other donuts that kind of make that brand.
Yeah.
But the idea of a donut is very different in the US than it is in the UK and other parts of the world. I mean, we have a lot of ring donuts and those kind of filled donuts that are just a kind of blob of dough with some kind of filling in the middle.
Yes.
Nowhere near as shaped or as kind of not as much care taken over them, I guess, like they are in the US.
Yeah.
What are your favorite? Well, what are your favorite types of donut?
In a moment where my Britishness is completely at risk here, I'm actually quite a big fan of the ring donut.
Really?
I like a jam donut now and again, personally.
I think jam donuts are the worst. It's the worst filling, jam.
It's great. It's sugary sweetness. And
boring, dull.
Yeah, well, it's not the most exciting donut ever.
Give me a custard donut any day. Custard-filled. Custard-filled donut.
I can't contend with that. Although a chocolate-filled donut had recently was quite nice.
I'd be all right with a chocolate-filled donut.
My flatmate had them and was handing them around, so I indulged. But I don't know if they really... Do they have filled donuts elsewhere, or is that kind of a more British-y kind of thing?
Krispy Kreme do filled donuts in the US. I mean, I remember the first time I went to America before Krispy Kreme were a known brand in the UK, going to this place that had the light on, which meant the dough was fresh and... Oh, it was beautiful. It was really, really lovely, doughy experience. I don't think filled donuts are necessarily a British thing. I don't actually know where they originated. I think Wikipedia could probably tell us. But,
yes, let's find out.
You're going to Wikipedia donuts right there.
Basically.
But we've got some donuts in the studio to actually try in a bit. We've got some ring donuts with a bit of icing on top and some pink and purple sprinkles. I've got some jam donuts, which I will try for the sake of the fact that we have enough for the three of us to have some of. But we've also got some custard donuts there as well. So Mushy P. Mike in the chat room has given us what I think is a vote for custard donuts because it's just said, custard donuts!
Yeah, I mean, that...
They are exciting.
According to Wikipedia, donuts have a disputed history.
Scandal.
Donut drama.
Ooh.
One theory suggests they were invented in North America by Dutch settlers. But Hanson Gregory, an American, claims to have invented the ring-shaped donut in 1847 aboard a lime trading ship when he was 16 years old. So there are a few possible donutty origins.
I mean, I did think they had a Dutch origin. Certainly filled donuts, I thought, had a Dutch origin. Michael Sofers, the one that I couldn't pronounce earlier, the name, sorry about that, in the chat room, says filled donuts appear in Poland. I'm assuming you're listening from Poland. I think, you know, the donuts appear everywhere these days, but where do they first appear? Which came first, the donut or the hole in the middle of the donut?
Well, this is also another interesting donut fact, something I don't really see that often in the UK.
You just said the words interesting donut fact.
Yes, I did.
Wow. Okay, go on.
Something I don't really see in the UK, but they do have worldwide, are donut holes, which is the bit from the middle. They just, what? When they make the donuts, they make them in a kind of circle shape and then just punch out the hole. And then donut holes are little kind of fried balls of dough that is the result of extracting the middle from the donut. And they're iced and sold separately.
But most places I know that do proper ring donuts, like if you go to the seaside in the UK and you go to a donut truck, they put them out in the ring shape and then go into the fryer in the ring shape, which must use less batter.
You'd think.
So that seems wasteful to make a ring donut and then punch the hole in the middle.
Well, apparently that's what it does. It says also on Wikipedia, that the donut holes were traditionally made from the dough taken from the center of ring donuts. Before long, donut sellers saw the opportunity to market holes as a novelty, and many chains offer their own variety.
So they're just small donuts,
basically,
without a hole in the middle of them.
It says traditionally, donut holes are made by frying the dough removed from the center portion of the donut. So they do make them into the circle and then punch it out.
Seems woefully inefficient. But we've had some chatter about this in the chat room. Apparently, says Mushy P. Mike, in Russia and Eastern Europe, there are meat-filled donuts.
Interesting.
That sounds nice.
It's a kind of savoury and sweet combination that probably works quite well, isn't it?
Like a char siu bun with pork in it or something from a Chinese place.
I'm totally agreeing with you. I don't eat meat, but I can imagine that flavour combination works quite well.
Well, guess who's just arrived back in the studio? It is Catherine.
It is. And she brings with her some fish and chips.
I saw that. You get yourself in front of the microphone. Tell us about your fish and chip experience. I'll take it out of the bag. I now have this bag of fish and chips in front of me. We've got here? Mushy peas. Lovely.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
British classic.
Oh, is this curry sauce?
I hope so.
So I hope that's what it is.
Yeah. It looks like curry sauce. Wow. Amazing. So that took a while then.
Yeah, well, I ended up getting blocked in the car park. So I had to wait for the person next to me to come out of the chippy with their order.
Oh, no.
So that, you know, we could all escape the the car park. A nice lady did try and guide me out, but then had to inform me, no, you are actually stuck.
Right, okay. Right, so we've got some fish and chips here. I'm just putting these down on the side. As we do this, Catherine, why don't you start to think about that magical time of the week that it is again. It is, of course, time for...
It's time for this week's Tumble Fumble. Are you ready for a scroll in the hay?
So, Catherine, tell us what is weird on the internet this week.
Considering our news at the start of the show, I thought things that look like Hitler.com might be topical.
There's a website just dedicated to things that look like Hitler.
Yeah. So the top thing on there at the moment is our man with his passport.
Oh, yes.
From the story at the start of the show. Then we've also got things like cats, doodles on the back of cars, the back of a Donald Trump mask, even.
So on one side of it, there's someone that looks like a complete fascist, and on the other side, it looks like Hitler.
Amazing. So, a nice little barcode there, making up a moustache.
Clever.
That's hilarious.
More cats, cars, other things, dogs. Actually, a notepad that looks like Hitler, if you can believe it.
Oh, wow. It kind of does a bit. Yeah, I just found it
a
myself.
A pad of paper that looks like Adolf Hitler. Yeah.
Wow.
So where can people go to see these?
Just things that look like Hitler.com.
Amazing.
It is, I think, a Tumblr blog, disguised to look like a proper website. Yeah, so if you want to check out things that look like Hitler, that's where you need to go. Next up, I think also following on from our news at the start of the show, somebody having actually tracked down Ugly Naked Guy, I was thinking, well, what about something to do with Friends? So I'm loving these reactions Twitter accounts at the moment. Friends Reacts or Friends Reactions is sort of been amusing me lately. So it's twitter.com/FriendsReacts with an extra S on the end. It's very visual. It doesn't really work on radio, so you'll have to just check that out yourselves if you like Friends and you like Twitter. so lots of pictures of the cast from Friends reacting to stuff, just like you would. And then kind of our last one is kind of, I think it's one of the things that I probably featured on one of the very first Tumble Fumbles, sort of way back when, probably years ago now. And that is Very British Problems.
Ah, so thinking about, would you fund it this week?
Yeah, just seemed topical. And they're at twitter.com/soverybritish. So you can check out all the latest British problems there. These are a little bit more text-based, so I can read some out. just everything that it means to be British, really. Things like having a default setting of, not too bad, tired, but okay.
Yeah, I think we all do that.
Kind of everyone's response to, how are you? it's like they were actually listening to our Would You Fund It This Week. Feeling like a right teacher's pet as you proudly present your train ticket to the inspector.
Oh, yeah. I've got mine. Look. I always get it out in advance and I'm like holding it up. Like, I'm fine. I've got mine.
Like, I'm just imagining Hermione with her hand up like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, oh.
yeah, basically.
Never being sure if you're smiling politely or grimacing menacingly.
Yeah,
I
always
do that. My life.
I was really like every now and then you walk past someone in the street and you catch eye contact, so you smile, and then I keep smiling and I walk past and I think, do I look like someone who's about to go on a rampage?
I just think I have that kind of resting grumpy face. And
you do have resting grumpy face.
And people are often asking me, "Oh, what's wrong?" Or
which is funny because when you then try and smile, you look like you're angry.
Yeah, it's impossible. Yeah. I can't.
I
found
you're weird, you are.
I found another one which speaks to me very personally as well, which is a helpful conversation that many Brits have around summertime. Hey, fever. Yeah. Have you got tablets? I've taken two already. Oh dear.
Oh, I don't suffer with hay fever, so I've never had to experience that, but so many people do.
Yes. And it's not fun.
I like their helpful translations as well. For example, if you say so, translation, you are very wrong.
Yes. Yep.
One I saw earlier was, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Translation, the results of doing that could be catastrophic, perhaps fatal.
Another one is when people go, if you like, which generally just means, nah.
Yeah, if you like, but I don't care. Yeah, so, these are also true.
Is that a weirdness of the internet for this week?
I think it probably is, yeah. Oh.
So we've got this fish and chips here then.
We have.
I've got some of these chips in my hand.
I have a veggie burger.
They don't really make any noise.
Well, if you guys have got your fish and chips, I'm going to go and hunt some out.
I've got some to pass you. I said I would dish this out.
Lovely.
I'm not a terrible host. I just don't know how we're going to put the curry sauce and mushy peas in the middle here. The studio's kind of
We've got screens in the middle. Yeah,
it's designed for radio shows, not really for eating.
Well, maybe if you had the mushy peas over there for a little while we had the curry sauce,
and then we could switch. We can do a switcheroo.
Dip timeshare. Mm-hmm.
So I've got a little bit of the chips over here. I've also got the fish. The fish was folded up.
Folded fish.
Folded fish.
Okay, I've never encountered that before from a fish and chip shop.
I'm going to have a chip.
Trying to pull out the thing and it's been folded over in half.
Now, the curry sauce that you get from a chip shop is quite special. It's not, really proper curry, is it? It's sort of a fruity madras, spicy horror. But it's tradition. So.
I also feel like I need to explain the concept of mushy peas, too.
Yeah, that's a weird thing.
It's like a marrow fat pea, not like a garden pea.
Yeah, I mean, it's green, but it's just a green marrow fat pea. Well, lots of them.
We've kind of
mushed together.
Too long.
Yeah, you cook them. It's a bit like refried beans.
Yeah.
but green and mushy.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you buy them in a tin, a slightly cheaper brand, they're kind of day-glow so green, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
These mushy peas are amazing. So, but they kind of taste a bit pea-like.
That's
presumably the idea. Yeah.
But it's bizarre. The texture is very, very weird. Very odd.
I'm going to have a go on my veggie burger here. And what it appears to be is a bunch of vegetables mashed up into a kind of patty. Because you know how you can get like soy burgers and stuff. This is very much a vegetable burger. But here we go.
Well, someone in the chat room says, I hate mushy peas. They're too mushy and ew.
Well, the veggie burgers...
have to share mine then.
It's
the veggie
not
burgers
mushy
were Mike, popular. Lots of people were ordering them. They kept having to shout for another veggie burger.
Well, we're obviously in a very hipster area then. Mm-hmm. Lots of veggie burgers required. How was the curry sauce? How are the chips?
It's good.
Very good. The chips are crispy yet fluffy on the inside.
Indeed.
Exactly the way they should be. The curry sauce is exactly
sort of
as I remember.
And madrassi.
So we're celebrating National Fish and Chip Day here in the Geekly Chronicle studio. It's only National Fish and Chip Day in the UK, but we are encouraging you to celebrate it the world over. Get your fish, get your chips, and give that a go. Now, we're about halfway through the show now. Exciting. Coming up in the second half of the show, we've got Game of Geeks. We're going to talk about various bits and pieces. We'll get an update on Would You Fund It? But very excitingly, we've got Dr. Sue Black coming on as a guest very shortly, who'll be talking to us all about, well, all of the wonderful things that she does, from working with women in tech, Girls Can Code on the BBC TV series that she worked on, Saving Bletchley Park, the National Museum of Computing. There's so many strings to the bow of Dr. Sue Black. It's absolutely wonderful.
You are listening to the Geekly Chronicles. It's like the Go Compare guy, only less annoying and more tuneful.
We've been enjoying our fish and chips here in the studio.
The fish is brilliant.
Really?
The batter is so crispy.
Lovely. But moving on from fish and chips to an infinitely more interesting subject, we said earlier on in the show that we'd be welcoming a very special guest tonight, Dr. Sue Black, OBE, talk about some of the many absolutely amazing things that she's done and she's worked on. There are lots of things to talk about with Sue. So I think rather than me waffling on, I'm going to bring up this fader here and see if we have Sue on the line. Hello.
Hi there.
Hello. It's very lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining the show this evening.
No, you're welcome.
So, an easy question to start things off with. We've just been talking about the fact that it's National Fish and Chip Day here. Is there a chip shop favourite for you?
Somewhere not in London, probably. Somewhere at the seaside.
What would be your favourite thing to order?
With friends. Oh, to order? Oh, just like regular fish and chips, mushy peas and a gherkin.
Oh, a gherkin. Yeah. Brilliant.
I had an English teacher who always used to swear that the best fish and chips in the country were in Whitby.
Whitby?
Apparently.
Right. Really?
It was northern.
Right.
A little bit of bias, but...
But from the north of England then to somewhere much more in the middle of the country. Sue, you have done a lot of work around the campaign to save Bletchley Park. For listeners that we have that aren't in the UK, can you tell us a bit about what Bletchley Park is and how you kind of discovered it?
Sure. So Bletchley Park is where the codebreakers worked during the Second World War in the UK. So when I first went there, I thought that probably there were about 50 people that worked there during World War II, but then I actually found out that more than 10,000 people worked there.
Oh, wow.
And about 80% of them were women. So that was when I first really got very interested in the work that was done there. And then found out that the work that was done there shortened the war by approximately 2 years and that 11 million people a year were dying. So potentially saved 22 million lives. Then I was hooked, basically. I just thought, what an amazing place. And after a couple of visits, found out that actually they were struggling financially, and so started a campaign to save it. So that was back in 2008 now. And at the time I was head of computer science department at the University of Westminster, and I was on a list of all the heads and professors of computing in the country. So when I found out that they were having financial difficulties at Bletchley Park, I emailed all the heads and professors of computing in the UK and said, you know, we've got to do something about this. And at the time, there was a petition on the 10 Downing Street website, which someone else had set up, saying, you know, calling on the government to save Bletchley Park, basically, because they were chronically underfunded. Well, they weren't getting any funding from government. And I emailed all the heads and profs and said, you know, please sign this petition. And I was amazed a few hours later when loads and loads of really famous, to me anyway, as a computer science graduate professors had signed the petition. And that kind of gave me the confidence to carry on and really start a campaign from there, I guess. So after that, I, with a colleague, we wrote a letter to the Times. And then I contacted the BBC, got on the BBC Today programme and BBC News. That was down to Rory Kefflin-Jones, the BBC. And then, and that was all great. It had loads of interest. But then what happened was that interest died down. And of course, you know, you can't take the same story back to a news service and say, you want to, you know, it's a story again. It's not, you know, like once it's been covered, that's it really. So it was a few months after that that I started using Twitter kind of towards the end of 2008. And it was then that I really realised that Twitter could make a massive difference, you know, because Twitter works through search. I could just put the term Bletchley Park into the search box at the top and I could find everyone that was talking about Bletchley Park across Twitter. And so basically started conversations with people and those built up and up and up and up. And so, you know, that it started off with a few people getting involved, but it turned out, you know, towards the end, I think we were campaigning for 3 years really until Bletchley Park director said that they were not struggling financially anymore. So yeah, that took from 2008 to 2011. But across that time, you know, just thousands of people got involved through Twitter. And, you know, I contacted some celebrities like Stephen Fry, and he got on board, and various other people, and just kind of built it up week on week, or like day on day, week on week, year on year. Built it up until, yeah, thousands of people were involved and the visitor numbers went up at Bletchley, which was great because their main source of funding then anyway was through people visiting the site and paying on the door. So when they got more visitors, they had more revenue, so that helped too. And then, you know, of course, more recently, stuff like the Imitation Game has been fantastic in getting visitors up to Bletchley Park and the Museum of Computing. So, well, it's, how long ago is that now? It's like 8 years ago we started the campaign, so quite a long time now. But, you know, I'm delighted that that it's safe and that thousands of people are visiting every year. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the campaign's had an amazing impact. I've been to Bletchley Park a few times for events or just to have a look around the museum. And not only has the money obviously been really well spent in making sure that everything's restored and you can actually go in and visit these buildings, but there are so many people there. I compare when I last went a few months ago to when I first went a few years ago. Yeah. And it's amazing to see how many people were there and actually enjoying the museum and learning about the history of technology from the code breakers in the war right through to seeing some of the more recent additions to their technology collection.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's incredible. It's just... it's wonderful to see it. I mean, I do kind of like now and again when I'm walking around, like all the new exhibits and stuff that they've got, I just kind of think kind of a little bit in me just kind of likes how it was before it was restored, you know, because it just kind of did look a bit more, I don't know. I don't know. It just kind of, I used to get a real, I mean, I still do get excited every time I go there, but just when it was kind of slightly looked a bit derelict, I just
kind of authentic.
Get that kind of sense of, yeah, I guess so. I mean, of course, it still is authentic and it's a great museum. So not to take anything away from it at all. But I just think, you know, like when you restore things, they just kind of just lose some tiny something about, maybe their authenticity or their, you know, I just felt very much connected into the past. And of course, I still do, but... I don't know. Don't know quite what I'm trying to say, but still, you know, kind of thinking back to those old days, I do kind of think it just had something special then too, which it, you know, it kind of hasn't got now. But it's, you know, it's got loads of other things as well to make up for it.
Well, and speaking of the exhibits, the last time I went there, one of the things that struck me, there was a someone, quite a small child, probably maybe four or five years old, who's going around the museum with some family, and there's the part where they have loads of discs on display, and there was a disc that was the size of this four-year-old that could hold less than a digital photo on it today. And that visual way of seeing that progress is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the stuff they've got at the National Museum of Computing at Bletchley Park are just incredible. And you're right, there's a massive disc, isn't there, which is about 3 or 4 feet tall, which I think was something like 4 megabytes or 1 megabyte. I can't remember. But yeah, it's just incredible. And you think what we can do now, I mean, it just blows your mind.
I mean, it even still blows my mind that I can download things so quickly. I think back to the internet of a decade ago, and I was still, I mean, I even think back to maybe when I was a teenager and I was trying to download music. And if I wanted to get one song from Napster, not that I still illegally download music, but
back then
I would set it going before school, and the one song might be downloaded by the time I got home.
Oh, wow.
And you just think about now, you just don't think about it. The speeds are incredible.
Yeah. When you open a picture on dial-up and watch it wipe down the screen as each line loads.
Yeah. So of all of the exhibits at Bletchley Park, which is there any that have really stood out to you as your favourite?
I like all the Alan Turing stuff, I suppose. You know, being part of helping the Turing paper to go to Bletchley Park, I suppose, you know, from getting Google involved back in the day, and just kind of helping to make all that happen and getting the Turing papers to actually be at Bletchley Park, being part of that was really exciting. I don't know if you remember, but they were up for auction at Christie's. I think it was 2011 or 2012. I can't remember. And Google came in after I got in touch with them and donated $100,000 towards Bletchley Park being able to get the Turing papers. And then you know, other funders came in because I think they were up to £300,000. So other funders came in to help Bletchley Park buy them, basically. And so that was really exciting to kind of see them up for auction at Christie's, which, if you've never been to an auction at Christie's, I highly recommend it. It's like being on a film set. It's just incredible. you know, with so many, you know, just so much money changing hands, and so many, you know, there's like Enigma machines up for sale and like an Apple One or something. I can't remember what it was. Brilliant. And Steve Wozniak was actually there at that.
Incredible.
Crazy. So, that was an exciting day. And so then, you know, for them to now be at Bletchley Park, I suppose Turing papers have to be my favourite, really. But, I mean, there's just so many. And the thing is, every time I go there, I see something different and find out something different. You know, it's just incredible.
I think the Alan Turing history that's at Bletchley Park is absolutely fascinating. A few years ago now, when it was Turing 100, 100 years since his birth, at Bletchley Park doing the Turing test, because they brought machines to Bletchley Park. And for listeners that don't know, the Turing test is basically where you chat to a computer or a human you don't know, and you try and work out whether or not it's a person or a robot. And it was absolutely incredible to see all of this kind of research and talent that had been put into making artificial intelligence, all based on the work that Alan Turing did all those years ago.
Yeah, well, that must have been amazing. Incredible.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I think that it's, you know, for anyone that loves technology, thinking back to everything like that and everything that you get at the museum there is amazing. But other than the Bletchley Park stuff, I mean, you've published a book about saving Bletchley Park as well, which is amazing.
Yeah, but of course you've all read it, right?
Oh, I have it. It is a fantastic read. So I do recommend anyone listening
goes and reads that book. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
I believe I was one of the Kickstarter funders for that one as well.
Oh, brilliant. One of the Unbound funders. That's wonderful. Thank you.
I think my mum was as well. She's a tech mum.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, Bletchley Park is not the only thing that you've been working on, and one of the many amazing things that you do as well is tech mums. And I know that we have some tech mums and tech mums fans listening. Cool. But for those that aren't, what's the idea behind Tech Mums?
Well, so the idea, I suppose, I really I love technology, and I have done for a long time. And I really think that kind of technology and education have changed my life. You know, I don't know if you know much about my life story, but basically it helped me when I was a single parent with three kids living on a council estate in Brixton. Kind of like going back into education and doing a degree in computing and then a PhD in computing just massively changed my life and my whole family's life chances, really. And so I'm really keen on people understanding even just the basics of technology, because I just think it opens so many doors for us, you know. And if you don't know just very simple basic things, which of course if you don't know them you don't know them, but it can kind of keep you back from being able to connect with the modern world, I suppose. So what I really wanted to do was to put together a program that would, I guess, take people from any level of understanding through to just understanding various different types of things around technology, which I think are really important. So the program's 6 weeks long, but it's just 2 hours a week. So it's 12 hours in total, and starts with like basic IT skills, you know, stuff like sending emails and documents and stuff. And we use Google Drive for that. So everything we use is free on the course. You don't have to buy any software or anything. And the course is free to mums as well. So yeah, we start with basic IT skills. And the second week we do like an app design workshop. So mums design their own apps. Then the third week we do web design. So we do like basic HTML and then some kind of drag and drop website design. Then the week after that we do social media and online security. So how to stay safe online, stuff like strong passwords, and also, you know, different social media platforms, what they are and how to use them, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, that kind of thing, and how to talk to your kids about technology and how to keep your kids safe online. And then the fifth week is we do coding in Python, because I think it's important for people to understand that at a basic level, programming, you know, it's sending a list of instructions to a computer. And I think lots of people don't even, you know, don't realise that that's what it is. So we get our mums writing some code in Python and understanding like basic structures. And stuff like, you know, loops and branching and stuff. And then the last week is a graduation ceremony. So the program's accredited by the Tech Partnership, which used to be eSkills. And so our mums get a certificate for attending. And what we normally do is have a graduation ceremony. So we have like maybe a mum who's set up their own business and become successful talking to the mums about what they've done. And then the idea is that mums can go on after that and maybe set up their own business or go back into education or maybe get a job or a better job, you know, with the skills that they've learnt on the course. And one of the main reasons I targeted mums was because I really want to reach as many people as possible. So I thought if I get out there to mums, you know, we don't just get the mums on board, we get the whole family, because we get the mums providing a kind of more tech-friendly atmosphere at home for the kids. And, you know, possibly out to the extended family and the community as well. And also I kind of want to flip that. I hate the phrase, it's so easy your mum can do it. That really annoys me. Mm. You know, and I want to have mums out there as tech role models, you know, helping everyone else with their technology, not, you know, I don't know. I just like, it's so easy your mum can do it. Just really annoys me. Yeah. Yeah. Your mum can do anything. Don't say that.
I entirely blame my mum for getting me into technology in the first place.
Oh, and so. Me too. Good, yeah, good. Absolutely the same for me too. And yeah, I think that's amazing. And I think, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, we need to get kids coding. And yeah, of course we do. But we need to get everyone interested in technology.
Kids,
we live
mums,
in a world
families,
where it's
everybody.
Important now.
Yeah, and there's stuff like, you know, the main kind of factor in kids making a decision of what to study at university is usually the parents, right? So if the parents don't think technology is a great career, they won't encourage their kids to do it, you know. So we need parents to be thinking about tech as a great career, because it is a great career. And, you know, there's a massive skill shortage in tech. You know, we just need more and more and more people who understand technology. There's just so many jobs, and if we're not doing something about that, it's crazy, I think. So that too.
Well, now, and thinking more about kind of life skills and people as well, every woman has quoted as saying that you embody the traits of a modern leader. which I'm sure is a lovely thing to hear. But what is your secret? How can our listeners, whether they're young or old, be the best they can be and kind of start living more like that as well?
Well, that's a good question. Well, it'd be good. It's what a shame every woman aren't here to answer that question for us. But I don't know. I mean, I just feel like, I suppose my basic philosophy is you've only got one life, so get out there and live it, I suppose. And, you know, I really feel that a lot of us don't realise, I mean, I didn't realise when I was younger that everyone has difficult times. You know, I just thought that for some reason I was having a bad time and lots of other people were having great lives. Whereas in fact, you know, it kind of goes up and down, right? Life's a roller coaster for everybody. We don't all have it great all the time and we don't hopefully have it really bad all the time. And the main thing that helps you to achieve and get you through things, and the main thing that successful people do, I think, is they just keep going. So, you know, we all get setbacks, but you have to just kind of, you know, like maybe feel upset about it for a short bit of time, but then get back on it and start going again. And I just think, you know, I wish I'd known that when I was younger, because I just thought things were different for everyone else than for me, but you know, they're not really. And you know, just having that ability to get back on the case and keep going, I think is critical. I think, you know, that's what got me through a PhD, and I've talked to lots of people. You know, like before you do a PhD, you think that everyone that's got a PhD is the most, you know, it's like the cleverest person ever, and that's the main thing it takes to get a PhD. But it's not. It's kind of like sheer determination and kind of a grit that gets you through it. And you know, I think it's the same for lots of things. You know, I mean, it's like the whole Bletchley Park campaign. You know, I mean, I could have given up at any time. And, you know, that was very much a roller coaster ride. If you read the book, you know, like one minute everything's going well, the next minute it's bad, and then it's great again, then it's bad again. You know, it's just life just goes like that, I think. And just keeping going, I would say, is probably one of the most straightforward but useful lessons that life's taught me, really.
Well, I'm reading here that you're the seventh most influential woman in IT. with that in mind, do you think you could help us secure Clippy as a future guest on the show?
Why? Why would you want that?
Because, you know, it looks like we're making a podcast. Yeah. We might need some help with that.
And then thinking about roller coasters and ups and downs and people having good days and bad days, I think Clippy embodies that rock and roll lifestyle.
Being literally made of ups and downs.
have you ever come up against someone though that told you just couldn't do something? You know, that either for whatever reason somebody said, "Oh, yeah, I see that thing you're doing, but no, I think that's stupid, and I'm you know, I don't think you could do it." And if you have, how have you put them in their place?
Oh gosh. Well, I suppose thinking right back, when I was at school, I wanted to study chemistry and physics and stuff, and a teacher persuaded me that I should be doing cookery, like home economics. So, unfortunately, I did what they said. You know, I studied home economics and then dropped it because I didn't like it, and missed out because I didn't study science subjects, so that was crazy. I guess more recently, no one really says things like that to me anymore. You know, I think the difficult times really are when you're younger and when you're not in any sort of position of power, I suppose. You know, I really have noticed the way that people talk to me has changed so much over the years, you know, because if you can imagine looking back to when I was, you know, 25 with three small children, and, you know, like I used to be a bit of, I suppose, sort of dressed like a bit like a rock chick, kind of, you know, like I used to wear like DMs and a miniskirt and a biker jacket and have like big curly black sort of unmanageable hair, I suppose. People treated me very differently then to they do now. It's incredible, really. And so a lot of the time then people would be saying no to me for various things when I was trying to make stuff happen in my life. But I have to say, yeah, I mean, the thing is, the more successful you are, the more successful you get, kind of. And the more people in general, treat you with respect. I mean, it's very rare now for someone to not treat me with respect, whereas 25 years ago, walking around with three little kids, you know, it was probably every day someone was disrespectful to me in some way or another. Well, so, yeah, I don't know if there's any advice or anything in there, but I think I do find it interesting that, you know, when you do become more successful in general, I mean, maybe everyone knows this and I just didn't really realise, but, you know, everyone's much nicer to you.
Well, I mean, speaking of becoming more successful, you have an OBE.
Yeah. How mad is that?
So, I mean, what was that like? How did you find out it was happening? And for any of our foreign listeners, can you explain, like, you know, how exciting that is?
Yeah, well, it's just crazy exciting, I suppose, you know, because I guess for me, it's kind of, you know, it's like proper recognition, I suppose, for that the stuff that I've been doing is worthwhile, not just to me, but also to my country, I suppose, mm-hmm. you know, which is amazing. It's just an amazing feeling. And I'm now, OBE stands for Officer of the British Empire. And one thing I read in the blurb that they sent me actually was that now I can get married in the chapel at St. Paul's Cathedral if I want to.
Oh, wow.
So which is a bit crazy. And so can my children. I was like, wow. I'm not sure we'll take them up on that, but that's very interesting.
It's there if you need it.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah, if we fancy it, yeah. It's just incredible. I mean, I just got a letter in November last year, basically a straightforward letter saying that I was being awarded an OBE. Would I accept it? And I was basically, I had to fill a form in and send it back saying, yes, I would accept it. It said it was for services to technology. Was that correct? I said, yes, that sounded correct. And, you know, that sort of thing. So I sent that off. And then it was announced on, I think, the 30th of December. It was like in the national newspapers, and BBC picked it up. So BBC did a bit on it as well. And then I went along 2 weeks ago today, actually, on 20th of May, and with some of my family. And there was about maybe 80 people, 80 to 100 people getting their different types of medal, basically, from Prince Charles. Mm. And so we went to Buckingham Palace, and which was just exciting on its own. First of all, we were taught what would happen, like, for the actual ceremony. So we had half an hour of like briefing before the ceremony. Mm. And, you know, we were taught that we had to, you know, where we had to stand and that kind of thing, and that we had to say, I think, Your Royal Highness to Prince Charles, and stuff like, and how to curtsy, that kind of thing. Oh, yes. So I haven't done a lot of curtsying in my life. All that kind of thing. And then it was the actual ceremony, and then I was kind of in a queue, all these people, and then went through, and then spoke to Prince Charles for a couple of minutes, and I shook hands with him. I don't think I was supposed to shake hands with him, but never mind. I haven't been taken to the tower yet, so hopefully I'm going to be okay. And then kind of it was all over. It was an amazing, absolutely amazing day. And just before that, I'd been given an award by Maserati, the car firm, and I asked them if I could possibly have a car for the day to take us to Buckingham Palace. And amazingly, they said yes.
Oh, wow.
So we had a chauffeur-driven Maserati taking us around.
Gosh.
It was just, it was just like a dream. It was just like a dream. And I ended up being on Woman's Hour that morning on BBC, AJ4 that morning as well. So the car picked us up at like 7 o'clock in the morning with a chauffeur. I've never been in a chauffeur-driven car before, so I'm getting quite excited. I've never been in a chauffeur-driven car before. So one picked us up from my house, drove us up to the BBC. So I did like a Woman's Hour interview with Jenny Murray. So I just couldn't believe that was happening, because that's like sort of a life goal for me too. then he took us over to Buckingham Palace, and like we drove in there. And then he took us over to a place where we went for lunch afterwards, and then drove us home like at the end of the day.
Wow,
and I just like had to pinch myself the whole time. It's just like, is this really happening to me? I can't believe it. But yeah, it was amazing.
I just... Just thinking about kind of as Britishness has been the theme of our program this evening. Just one thing you said there struck me as exceptionally British. Like you've got an OBE, you've received this award from the royal family, and they want you to come down and receive it at Buckingham Palace, but you'll queue up before you before you get given it.
Wait your turn. Yes. I was in a long queue.
So we've had a question from one of our listeners come through in the chat room as well. It's a listener called Samathy, who incidentally tweeted earlier that he would love to meet you someday.
So
you're a real role model there.
Hello.
So Samathy says, how do you suggest is the best way for others to start their own events or organisations? If we have an idea, how do we get it off the ground?
Gosh, well, it depends what it is, really. But I would say, I mean, if there's something you're really passionate about, find other people that are passionate about it as well. And then work it out between you, really. I mean, you don't have to do everything in your own. I think you can come up with ideas on your own, but it's more fun doing stuff with other people. And especially if they care about the things that, you know, that you care about, then chat to them and then just keep going, really. You know, the stuff that I was saying before. You know, try and make it work one way. If it doesn't work that way, then try another way and just keep going, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's such amazing advice. And it's certainly when I think about our show that we do here, you know, the three of us get together and do that. And that's something that is something that we couldn't really have got off the ground individually. But
right.
And then, as you were saying earlier about your campaign.
It's more fun if there's other people. Yeah, it's more fun if there's other people that want to do the same thing you do, then, you know, make just... so much more enjoyable.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for answering Samathy's question there. I'm sure they are very happy that you got a chance to respond. So look out for them at an upcoming tech event, I'm sure. Well, thank you, Sue, so much for coming onto the show today and chatting to us about things. I mean, do you have any other kind of messages or any words of wisdom that you'd like to impart to the listeners before we let you go?
Well, I think follow your passion is important. I think just keep going is important. Another thing I think is really important that I didn't know when I was younger was to surround yourself with people that support you. You know, like I kind of had the experience when I was younger where friends that were around me weren't always the most supportive of things that I was doing. Of course, some were, but some weren't. And I do think that, you know, especially when you're possibly if you're not that confident, which I wasn't when I was younger either, it really did kind of stop me from or inhibit me from doing things, having people around that were kind of making me feel bad about myself. And I think it's really important to surround yourself with people that make you feel good about yourself and that support you to do the things that you want to do. So I would say that's really helped me as well.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that. And you have a request for us for this evening.
Yeah, Beyonce. Yeah.
It can't be a bit of Beyonce.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very.
I love Beyonce. Can I just say I love Beyonce?
Of course. Well, so we'll play that for you now, Sue. Thank you so much again from all of us and from all of our listeners for coming onto the show today. And best luck with everything in the future.
Thanks very much. You're very welcome. I've enjoyed it. It's lovely to chat to you.
Thank you.
It's the Geekly Chronicles. Now for this week's Game of Geeks.
Game of Geeks is back.
Yeah.
And we are level pegging, I believe, between Kez and Chris. After four shows, we have two apiece. So, it's all to play for as we go into episode five.
Game of Geeks, for those first-time listeners amongst you, Catherine Pitts, Chris and I against each other.
Indeed.
In a game of guesswork on films, TV, books, shows, etc.
etc.
Stuff.
Yes.
Chris is facing the other way as he's within screenshot.
I sit next to Catherine in the studio, and the answers are on her screen. So I'm being forced to face the wall.
Yes, like the dunce.
Yes.
Okay. So this week it's buzzers. Kez goes.
Oh, I need you to press your button first, you see.
Oh, I did.
Oh, how bizarre.
Do we have buzzer issues?
We might do. Oh, I can press the button from here. This week, my buzzer goes. There we go.
And Chris's buzzer goes.
And I'm just going to go around the other side and fix that.
Nice, yes. Nice British TV references there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this one's a bit more obvious. But do you know where the other one's from?
Well, I do.
Yes. I wonder if our listeners do.
I don't know. Let's have a look and see if anyone is telling us in the chat where they think those are. Hey, there we go. Scattermoon knows.
Hey,
it's Grange Hill versus EastEnders. Yes, quite right.
Oh. Grange Hill versus EastEnders.
Good fun.
I think I have no light.
Yeah,
on
there's
my
nothing.
Box,
no lights coming up on the buzzers. We seem to have some buzzer related issues. I mean,
oh, now it's back. Oh. There we go. So if I press that,
and I press
be
this.
Able to...
No, we're still not working today. Never mind. Well, I'll tell you what we will do. I will press some buzzer buttons and I will just watch for Chris twitching and press his buzzer when I think that.
I have a feeling.
I think we're
going
to have to do the Hermione hand gesture. I think is going to be our cue for this.
Well, maybe we just have to go, when we're ready to do it. Okay.
Okay.
First question,
a bird
then.
Noise. Okay, right. So your first clue is to a book.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, right. So clue number one, if somebody gets it on clue number one, then you get 3 points. Clue number two, 2 points. Clue number three, you get just 1 point.
Okay.
So, you got the picture. So, clue number one for 3 points. Ready to make your bird noises. okay, so this book is the first in a trilogy by Suzanne Collins.
Bah! Ah, it works!
It works!
Oh, God. Chris.
Oh, dearie me. I'm going to go with The Hunger Games.
Yes. Nice.
I didn't know who wrote that.
3 points there for Chris.
Let's see if my buzzer works.
Note of that.
Yes. Let's find out.
Let's find out with a clue about a film.
All right.
Okay, so a clue about a film. So, set in 1983, this film features the songs Sweet Dreams Are Made of This.
My buzzer doesn't work.
But you
there
let
we
me
go.
Know
there
that you
is.
Wish to guess.
There we go.
Guess.
Is this X-Men Apocalypse?
It is.
Hey, I may have seen that a few times already this week.
Yes.
That might be why I included it.
Yeah. But my buzzer seems to be the only one not working, so I call sabotage.
Oh, no.
I'm saying nothing.
Things are getting dirty in Game of Geeks. Hey. Well, you're guessing them all on the first clue. I thought that one with 1983, you might think it was actually an 80s film, but no, very good.
Having just seen X-Men Apocalypse three times this week.
Yeah, you didn't even let me get to the end of the clue.
Sweet Dreams are Made of These, 1980, that did it for me.
Yeah, there we go. okay, so next up you have a TV show.
Oh.
Okay.
Right. So the opening theme song is This Wheel's on Fire by Julie Driscoll and... Yes.
Pressed it. Is that absolutely fabulous?
Yes.
Way! Oh.
You guys are on fire tonight.
amazing. I've loved that show forever and know the theme tune. And also, I was watching it at your house the other day. Yeah. So it's fresh in my mind.
I'm beginning to see a theme with these questions.
Hey, I don't even have a buzzer. So
if you pay attention to the things which I'm paying attention to, then you win Game of Geeks.
I think that's
the theme. So obviously there's a film coming out of Ab Fab soon. So I've been trying to catch up and sort of watch all the series on Netflix. So yeah, I have been watching that. Okay, so your next clue is to a website.
All right.
Okay.
Ready? Founded in 2006, this site is headquartered in San Francisco, California, and has offices in Nashville, London, Dublin, Berlin, Melbourne, Mendoza, and Sao Paulo.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Founded in 2006, this site is headquartered in San Francisco and has offices in Nashville, Dublin, London, Berlin, Melbourne, Mendoza, and Sao Paulo.
Founded in 2006?
Yes.
Facebook?
No. I mean, they probably do, but that's not the one I'm getting at.
But no.
okay, well, it cares, yes.
Twitter?
No.
Okay, maybe next.
You're just going to run through all of
all
maybe
the
next
websites.
Clue. Maybe next
okay,
clue.
So clue number two for 2 points. This site has two mobile apps, one called Entry Manager and one...
Oh, we were quite on time there.
I think it was Chris.
It was. Go on.
Eventbrite.
Yes.
Ah.
So that was very good. It's just 1 point in it, but...
Oh, I get to press this button. This is my favourite button in the world. Hold on.
This week's winner is...
Kez.
Yes!
So Kez takes
I'm
the lead.
I'm winning!
3-2.
We're halfway through the series, Chris, so we've still got half a series to go.
Yeah we do.
Oh, wow. Amazing. I can't believe I won that one.
So I've just clicked point. Away from my game of peak sheet now. So that yes. nobody can see the clues I'm working on for subsequent weeks.
Brilliant. That was a real quick fire round, which was impressive since my buzzer doesn't actually work. I'm sat here.
Awkward.
Yeah.
Worried you may have broken it with enthusiastic buzzering.
Perhaps. Yeah. I think we need to take these buzzers apart. For anyone that's seen the studios here. No, still not.
No, still dead.
For anyone who's seen this.
Mine still works.
Tune in next week. For anyone that's seen the studios here, a lot of it is hand-built, which is brilliant, but it does mean sometimes if you hit something a bit hard, it stops working.
Yeah, stops working, falls off, disassembles. Yeah. All of these things have happened during shows in the past.
Yeah, Scattermoon says, Kez, congratulations to me. So I'm quite happy with that. apparently our...
Indeed.
We are really geeking it this evening.
Well, that's
impressive.
What we aim.
Impressive geekeries tonight. So there we go.
Scattermoon also hopes I do an EastEnders ending face each time I press that.
What does
buzzer.
An EastEnders ending face look like?
Staring into space dramatically, as he says. Okay. And I'm pleased to inform you I absolutely do.
Well, I think we need to do a twit pic of this. So we'll get that done during the next song. We will.
Yeah.
Look out for a Twitter photo of that. Well, we've still got some donuts to eat to go along with these fish and chips, so stay tuned. Please do get your last-minute requests in. Don't forget you can request stuff in the chat room. You can request stuff on Twitter as well.
You are listening to the Geekly Chronicles. Put your email in an envelope and just chuck it out the window.
Well, £1 fish. This yes. fish was not £1.
No.
But the fish and chips were good. Were they? Were they good? They I mean, good. I enjoyed
I
it.
I was a fan.
Oh, yeah.
So it is National Fish and Chip Day, and there have been lots of National Fish and Chip Day tweets, but there have also been lots of tweets around National Donut Day.
Yes. Donuts. As we were saying earlier, there's a lot of donut hype worldwide at the moment with National Donut Day, and we had that discussion earlier about what makes a donut a donut.
I mean, we were talking about, what do you prefer, Catherine? You were out at this point. Do you like ring donuts? Do you prefer filled donuts?
I got to say, my favourite donut ever is just the raspberry jam donuts from Sainsbury's.
Yes. Sainsbury's donuts.
Still not a fan of jam donuts.
And then after that, it's probably just the original glaze from Krispy Kreme, just because they're so kind of light and... Oh,
they are very good.
That's just reminded me, actually, of one of the best donuts I think I've ever had was a Krispy Kreme donut. If you've heard of Biscoff, you probably already know how addictive this is.
Yes.
But it's like, you know those caramelized biscuits?
What's Biscoff? Never heard of it.
You know those caramelized biscuits you get with like tea and coffee sometimes? Basically those ground up into a paste.
Right.
And it's absolutely delicious. So they do that on a donut with... kind of crushed up caramelized biscuits and kind of creamy filling as well, which is incredible.
Well, I have here some donuts on a plate. I've got some ringed donuts, custard filled and jam filled donuts for us to try and kind of comment on. So Samantha's asking if anyone's actually put fish in donuts. Scattermoon said International Fish and Donut Day, which I don't mind. I think in that sentiment, I'm going to see what... I'm going to see what it tastes like to dunk a donut in curry sauce from a chip shop.
Oh,
have you got the curry
I'll
sauce
pass
over
you
there?
The curry sauce.
Right. So we'll give this a go. I've got some curry sauce in front of me here. And I'm going to take a...
Although that would be quite an interesting filling for a donut.
It would be a curry sauce filled donut.
Actually, yeah. Put some curry sauce in the donut and then kind of roll it in something that's not sugar.
That sounds nice. Like garam masala or something. Well, I've got curry sauce and a bit of donut here, a bit of ring donut.
We're gonna do this
is an iced ring donut with sprinkles, everyone.
I'm dunking. So I am actually dunking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can my co-presenters confirm I actually have this on the donut?
Yeah, that there is a curry sauce
disgusting.
On it.
Thoroughly okay. dunked donut.
I'm going to try this. Someone commentate here. I can't talk and eat at the same time.
All right.
It's going in aeroplane styling. it's biting. Oh, there's biting going on.
And the initial reaction looks confused and kind of disgusted, unsure why they've done this.
Yeah, the eyes are screwed up. The lips are curling.
That didn't go together well.
No, it does not look from the face you made like it did.
Wow.
Okay, we will not don't be, do that. We will not be endorsing the Madras donut.
Well, here, you can have the,
not endorse the Madras donut.
You can have the rest of those donuts there.
Oh, there's definitely some raspberry jam donut here that I'm going to have to have.
I'm going to have a little bit.
That's my thang.
It's your thang.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Is cackling. Touristy Goblin says, holy, I love Biscoff. With two hearts.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's a good one. Oh, wow. Oh, I can still taste curry sauce and icing in my mouth at the same time. It's not good.
That doesn't sound good.
I might just have some chips and curry sauce now.
Oh, no.
So
I've got jam in my hand.
Yes, this is the one problem with the filled donut, is if you're not careful about how you eat it, the filling goes everywhere.
This studio is going to need a jolly good clean.
Mm. Yeah, I've already got curry sauce on the desk, and now I've got jam.
It's just your end of the studio. We should coat it in plastic.
We should, really.
Yeah. Make me
this happens quite often.
Laminated.
The creche area of the studio.
White clean
for Catherine.
Area.
White clean, yeah. Sort
absolutely.
Of Scotch guard the entire thing.
Wow.
Other brands of waterproofing are available.
Yeah, just So how are you finding the combination of fish and chips then with donuts?
Well, I mean, think donuts make a good dessert.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of...
probably not going to be mixing it up as much as you.
I wouldn't have them the way you did, but...
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of thinking that we could make this an international day. I'm thinking this could be a new holiday for America and the UK to come together to further strengthen our special relationship of diplomacy and going to war together. We can have fish and chip day and donut day on the same day, and it's all bliss. Blissful wonder and wonderful blissness. Do we not think?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to solidify that by eating one of these ring donut chunks with some sprinkles on.
Yeah, how are they? So, I mean, listeners, what do you prefer? Let us know.
It's a little drier than the other one.
Is it ring donuts? Is it filled donuts? What is your preference, people? What is your preference?
And speaking of listeners' preferences, I think it's about time we had a look at the Would You Fund It?
Would You Fund It going? What do people think of the idea of the Great British Boot Camp?
Well, so, let's have a look. It says here that the Great British Boot Camp, as decided by our live audience tonight, thank you, has been funded.
Love it.
Unanimously.
Unanimously.
Amazing.
Yes, 100% of the votes that came in tonight were for funding the Great British Boot Camp.
That's incredible.
Considering my last idea was 100% not funded.
you have, this is black and white for you, no grey area.
Yes.
Yeah. People
either
terrible.
Love,
you're like Marmite. Mm-hmm. Your brain is Marmite. Yes. People either love your ideas or hate them.
But that does mean we've all had one idea funded.
So we're on equal footing.
We are. And very well done. Very well done, Catherine.
Very well done, Catherine.
I
love it.
All of those votes.
Yeah.
You're just going to use that for
those sound effects are never going away.
That is going to be my new text alert tone, I think. That's just pretty amazing. I'm never going to stop pressing that button unless I press the one next to it.
Anyway.
Yes, sorry. Why do you let me control the buttons?
That's a good question. There's one tweet I've just seen. It says, my boss recommends inflating jam donuts with squirty cream.
What an incredible way to do that. That's amazing. I'm going to have to do that
I'd
now.
Be scared that it was going to sort of explode all over me.
I think that's kind of
but
part
what? Jammy,
of the fun.
Creamy horror.
So who cares? You're covered in jam and cream and you get to lick it all. It's amazing.
It's kind of...
I mean, that could go in so many different ways, some of them not friendly for radio.
No,
but
this is true.
What an amazing way to eat a donut.
It's like a game of chicken, really, because you kind of keep squirting until the donut explodes.
Why do you inflate chickens with squirty cream until they explode? That's really mean.
I think this may be a food combination that we're going to steer clear of.
Have you never tried chicken and waffles?
I don't eat meat.
Have you never tried chicken and waffles?
No.
They say they turn away from me.
Yeah, sorry about that. So chicken and waffle is great. I had it the last time I was in the US. It's an amazing combination of waffles, like the breakfast waffles that you get, with fried chicken on top of it, covered in syrup.
Right.
It's amazing.
Okay. I'll trust you on that.
Yeah. It's good. So I'd imagine that exploded cream chicken is probably good too.
Ew.
But a little bit of a cruel way to kill a chicken by exploding it with cream first.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Mean. Mean. I'm confused.
This is taking a dark turn.
Yes.
You're listening to the Geekly Chronicles. It's like Nyan Cat, only we don't poo rainbows.
Most of the time.
Well, some of us don't.
Yeah.
So that was the Fiddler on the Deck. Yes. Thanks to Scattermoon for requesting that. It's by a German man, because, of course, being the Fiddler on the Deck is legal in this country. Anyway, it has been a great show tonight.
It has. Thank you so much, Dr. Sue Black, OBE, for joining us and talking about all of your incredible achievements.
Yep. Thanks to you, Catherine, for A, going to get our fish and chips, and B, for another great tumble fumble.
Yes.
Well, and congratulations on winning this week's Would You Fund It?
Oh,
what a great one.
Yeah, and congratulations on Game of Geeks.
Yes.
Oh, I know. Wasn't it great? Wasn't it great?
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
How many times am I going to hear that over the next 2 weeks?
Oh, a lot.
And of course, thank you to all our listeners for your wonderful requests and all your fantastic bants in the chat room.
Indeed. Yep.
Thanks to all our regular listeners. Thanks also to people we haven't seen before in the chat room. Mushy P, Mike, Touristic Goblin, Samothy. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. It's been...
thanks for all the tweets.
And any new listeners that have just been lurking and listening.
Absolutely. Mm. So you'll be able to listen to the show online as well in a few hours once it's then up. But we're back on the air in 2 weeks' time. 17th of June. There we go. I was about to say I have no idea what date that is.
I looked it up because I knew you were going to say that.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we'll be back on the 17th of June then.
Yes.
So, from me, Kez.
From me, Chris.
And me, Catherine.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Geekly Chronicles. Content was researched and vaguely fudged together by Chris, Catherine and Kez, who are also your hosts for this evening's show. The Geekly Chronicles is an independent production. Any reference to any persons or things, living or dead, was probably an error. What is reality anyway? Don't take the blue pill, live long and prosper. Wear sunscreen.
Citizenship not included.